How do you get a confession out of a serial killer who you don't even know is a serial killer? This former FBI agent has done that and a lot more. Jeffrey Reinick on the show now. Good morning, and thank you for your service.
Good morning, Chaz, and thank you for having me.
This, so you're planning on doing a polygraph with a guy who you think is a witness in a murder, and the polygrapher and the pizza shows up at the same time, and you ask the guy, well, which one do you want first?
Right.
And it turns out that he said, I'd like to talk to Jeff alone, please, meaning you.
Yes.
What happens next?
Well, after he asked to see me alone, a lot of eyes start rolling among the people that I work with, because I've been very fortunate to get confessions from many subjects. In fact, my wife, Lori, calls my career as suffering a successful career, because these confessions are very, very difficult to hear. And they leave you touched. There's no way you can listen to them and not be affected afterwards. But so when he said that he wanted to speak to me alone, we put him into an interview.
So it's kind of like
room.
A here we go again.
Yeah.
It was, exactly. and basically, before I started talking to him about anything, I wanted to make sure I knew exactly what was being asked of me to get from him. And it came so suddenly, and no one really expected it, that basically I just went in and did what I thought was best. And when I entered the room where he was, he was really sullen and looking into the corner, and he started by telling me he had done some really terrible things.
And you're thinking that he's going to confess to this murder that you think he's a witness in?
No, actually, a lot of people start off saying things like that. The reality that people should know is that good people do bad things. And we all who consider ourselves and others to be good people occasionally will do something bad that we're not proud of. And many times they start off with that. And what I always say, because I'm talking to myself as well, is that, you know, good people do bad things. It doesn't mean that they're a bad person. So from there we go, you know, let's talk about what you mean.
Well, this opens this person up to you.
Yeah.
And I feel like, okay, this guy gets me.
Right.
I'm not a bad person, but I've done some bad things and I feel some guilt over it.
Yeah.
Correct. And Chaz, the one thing I'd like you to understand is that I really mean it when I do these interviews and I share this empathy. I really mean it. I'm not acting. It's just who I am.
Yeah.
Now, I was reading the book last night, and Jeffrey grew up, his dad was worked at a funeral home.
Okay.
So as a kid, he saw firsthand people coming in and grieving. And so he had a lot of empathy for these people.
Right, right, right.
And this, you know, this book is great, by the way. We're going to link up to it. But I want to get to the moment where this guy drops a bomb on you guys. Like, you did not expect him to say this, did you?
No, not only did he say that, he first said that he was responsible for the murder that we were there about, but then he said there was more. And he had talked about some things in his life, and I thought he was referring to them, but then it became clear from his insinuations that he was talking about the three women out of the Cedar Lodge, which my boss had been on the news advertising that they were that homicide had been solved and the guilty people were in prison. So many times you'll get people that will make a false confession. So my first thought was, is this a false confession?
What's interesting is that you were on this Yosemite case where three women disappeared, two girls and a woman. They disappeared. It was in the winter.
Right.
A lot of people thought it was a car accident, whatever.
Yeah.
They're found. Two of them are found burnt in a trunk of a car that was a rental car that was on fire. The third one was found in another part of the park, and they thought they had the people for this.
Yeah,
but Jeffrey was working that case, and leading on it, but then the boss decided, I don't like what Jeffrey's doing with this, and so he takes it. Becomes a very high-profile case, by the way.
Yeah.
So Jeffrey gets off of that case, and now he's on this case.
Right.
This guy confesses to this case, but then says, oh, that other case.
By the way.
That's me, too.
Yeah. Oh.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
Unreal.
Easy day.
So,
have you guys ever seen the show? Well, I'm sure you've seen the movie, Animal House and the Blues Brothers.
Yes.
And in Animal House, the fraternity was on double secret probation.
Yes.
The Los Angeles Times at one time called me a rogue agent because I had different ideas. I was the Sacramento division case agent for the Unabomb case.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't get along with the FBI managers then, and they removed me and put me on this, like, double secret probation that no one could confirm. But then with this case, with the Yosemite case, the same thing happened. I was removed from that one, too, because I didn't agree with the management. So everybody was just, you know, everybody just laughs about it. And it doesn't mean that we lose the value of what we're doing, but it always seems like I'm always getting in trouble doing these cases.
This guy, before he confesses to the original three, was he on your screen for the original three? Because he was a handyman at this lodge where they disappeared.
No, he was not on our screen. And in the interview, when he started making these indications, I asked him some questions that only the killer would know. And he answered them. The most remarkable one of which was that someone had sent a letter to the FBI office in Modesto and provided a map, which was the location of Julie Sund, which was the third victim we recovered by Don Pedro Reservoir. And that map was exactly right. He knew not only the map, but he knew the words that were written on the map. And for me at that point, it was
clear. You got chills?
Yeah, he was the guy, and the most important thing that I felt was, you know, I didn't want to screw it up, because so many people depend on what you do, and you don't want to let down the people you work with.
What do you mean, screw it up?
Well, you know, as you're seeing now with all the stuff that's in the news, the success of an investigation depends on recovering the truth. And in many instances where you're dealing with a subject who has committed the crime, the truths are the elements of the crime they committed, which are then used in court to prosecute that person. So when I'm worried about screwing it up, I'm worried about not getting the necessary elements of the crime from him to demonstrate that he is, in fact, the one who committed these murders.
What chill had to go through your body when he told you what was on that note? That must have been the moment where you were like, wow.
It was a huge surprise. But I had been in the car with him for 90 minutes, and we had talked a lot. And this entire time, I believed he was a witness. I was told he was a witness. Even when I got to the FBI office with him, I was told he was a witness, and I was not aware that I would be talking to him. So when he told me, you know, that he was the guy, part of me was, like, shocked with, you know, disbelief. How could this be the guy? He's a witness. And then as we talked further, it was clear that, you know, he was the person.
And the person we're talking about is Carrie Steiner, who was convicted of killing four people, four women, these women that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
But he's a suspect for other killings as well, correct?
Well, when I had him, and when I talked to everyone, I like people, Chaz, and I enjoy getting to learn about them, and I share myself with them, too. It's human nature that when you share something, the person you share yourself with is going to want to share themselves back. And in this case, I learned, and Carrie told me that he had never told anyone before, but in his life, when he was 12 years old, he had been sexually assaulted by a relative. And that relative eventually had been murdered by a shotgun blast. And I wondered whether Carrie was the one who had done it, but I never asked him that, because at a time like this, it was my belief that the only thing he had left in his life for hope was his family.
Yeah.
This guy he was a brilliant guy, like twisted, yeah, but brilliant. Like in the lodge room where the women were, and this was they were victims of circumstance. He had targeted other people who, as he was going to kill these other women, somebody arrived, right? Yeah.
Yes, he said he had been watching the incoming women or visitors to the Cedar Lodge for over a year. And he had gone to great lengths to prepare for what he wanted to do. And it's my personal opinion, and I think, you know, it's a matter of the profiling. I was certified as a profiler. But when you have a person who has a deviant sexual fantasy, this fantasy will dominate their lives and be all they think about. So when this happens, like in Carrie's case, he prepared for what he knew was going to do. Most men that have sexual fantasies that are illegal know not to cross that line. But some of them do cross that line. And you read about them every day. And in this case, it's Carrie. He prepared for over a year. He watched TV. He learned about forensic techniques. And if I could just illustrate to you one example of that, is the letter that you guys just mentioned that had the location of Julie. He actually went and purchased the paper, the envelopes, and stamps, and he wrote a map that said, "We had fun with this one," deliberately misleading how many people were involved. And then he took that letter, and he found a kid coming out of a restaurant, and he gave the kid $5 to spit onto these cotton gloves he had, and he used that saliva to seal the letters, knowing that we would look at the DNA and it would mislead us. Wow. That's how smart he was.
And this was in what year?
Yeah.
This was in 1999, and if you consider he was planning this, then it would have been 1998 as well that he started planning.
Way ahead of the curve.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Wild. And that's what you're dealing with. So, like, and when you guys, so he was planning to murder some girls, and then someone showed up, and then he was like, okay, can't do this one.
Right.
And then he was prowling through the lodge, walking back and forth, and he just happened to catch a curtain open in this window, and he saw the two girls and the woman in the room, and he said, "This is the room." And it kind of reminds me of the Cheshire home invasion that we had here. It was just such a random.
Yeah.
They were at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And this guy targeted them. And then after he took them out of the room, he left wet towels behind to make it look like they had showered and left in a hurry.
Yeah.
This is a guy who was really thinking this stuff out and didn't want to be caught.
Yeah.
He didn't want to
work perfectly.
And for you to get a confession out of a guy who did so much to not get caught.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something
that's major
special about your
abilities. Yeah.
I learned that 2 days before he confessed to me, he had been interrogated for several hours by an FBI agent and a Park Service agent, and he gave nothing up. And then 2 days later, here with me, he tells me everything, which a lot of it he had never shared about his life before. And for me, it's always an honor when people think I'm worthy of sharing their innermost secrets. But at the same time, you get a disruptive feeling that, you know, you're going to use the information this person gave you against them and take them off the street so they can't hurt anyone else. So even though you're doing the right thing for the right reasons, you still have a sense of, you know, feeling that I don't even
you're
know
betraying
how to
them.
Yeah,
you're betraying like trust.
The trust. Yeah,
right.
But he knew. But so when you walked in and you said, "What's wrong?" He said something like, "I think this is the last meal I'm going to have as a free man." He knew talking to you,
this was it,
was going to send him away.
Yeah.
Yes, and to show you how the sexual fantasy permeates their entire thought process. that before he confessed, he attempted to negotiate with me that he wanted to see child pornography in exchange for his confession. And we explained to him that you can't commit a crime to solve a crime. And he was not permitted to see that pornography. And he had to decide on his own what he was going to do. And he decided to confess. He knew he had to stop himself. I told his parents that I was his tool in stopping himself.
And there's a whole nother twist in this guy's life, too. I think he was 14 when his brother Steven, 7, was kidnapped?
Correct.
His brother was 7 years old, going to or coming from school, and was picked up by a pedophile and kidnapped. And he was gone for 7 years. And then he escaped with another victim.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be this whole media circus. But that was a part of this wild web of this kid's life.
Yeah. Wow.
There was a movie that was made based on Steven's experience that was called I Think My First Name Is Steven, because 7 years after he had been abducted, he wasn't sure who he was anymore.
Has anyone approached you to make a movie about your book?
First of all, I should tell you that these cases with the children has had a very profound effect on my emotional welfare. So my wife, Lori, and I, we believe that if a person were to approach us wanting to tell the truth, we would probably consider that. So far, the producers and stuff that have come to us, they want to turn it into something it isn't. They want to turn me into something that I'm not. And so we have not agreed to do any projects with anyone.
I got you.
Yeah.
Well, Chaz Palminteri had the same thing happen, and he held out, and they finally made A Bronx Tale the right way.
Yep.
So hang in there.
Oh, wow.
It does happen.
That's with Robert De Niro, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Well done. Well done, Chaz.
Yeah, you know, he wanted to be in that movie. He wanted it made a certain way. No one wanted to do it. They just wanted to buy the script. He said, no, I got to be in it, and it's got to be done this way. And Robert De Niro saw the play, said, I'll do it. Handshake deal backstage, and it was done.
And I really respect you for that, because my wife, Lori, and I believe that the story is not only solving a serial homicide, but it's also the emotional elements that contribute to the story, that contribute to him. For instance, I believe that Harry Stainer lived a life where he never was treated with emotion, never with love from his family. And I believe that one of the reasons he might have committed his crimes was seeking that intimacy that you get. They say that if you're with someone while they're passing, it's a very intimate moment, just like if you're with someone, you know, celebrating your marriage. But I do believe that Kerry Stainer was seeking the intimacy of an emotional relationship with another person, and that's why he committed his crimes. But people judge me for making that theory.
What did you think of Mindhunter? Do you think they did a good job with that?
Well, there have been more than one, I think. I love the series that was on Netflix.
Yes.
I thought that was really good.
I mean, and, you know, the guy.
John Douglas.
Yeah, he does a comment in your book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I didn't even know he knew who I was. Like, I felt, you know, like he's like my rock star. And for him to know who I was and to make that comment was surreal for me. It still is.
I could talk to you for hours, so we're going to have you back.
Yep.
Okay.
I got to roll right now, but...
Okay.
Man,
thanks for calling. It's wonderful talking to you.
Oh, my God. Yeah. This is... I feel like I'm talking to one of the rock stars of the FBI here.
Yeah.
And thanks for...
I'm just me.
The title of the next book, I'm just me.
Well, you're doing a good job of being you.
Yeah, so far.
So keep it up.
Okay. Keep being you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, guys.
All right. We're linked up to the book, In the Name of the Children, that's Jeffrey Reinick, former FBI agent.